Welcome, everyone, to episode 002 of the Spectacular Comic Book Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Reiner. Today, joined by Kyle Federline again. Hello, sir.
Hello.
You're doing a bang-up job co-hosting. You're killing it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I try my best.
And we've gotten some great feedback from people already on the first episode. Our listenership really, is that a word?
Yes.
It really picked up once it hit iTunes. That seems like where a lot of people podcast. So thanks for checking it out. We're doing our best to keep up on the workload here. There's a lot of reading we got to do, it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
This week, we've picked another 5 to 6 books. We're not going to review all of them. Some of them didn't kind of hit our criteria. We thought they would. One piece of feedback we've gotten was at the end of the episode to give everyone kind of a heads up on what we're going to be buying the next week. So we will do that. We might not end up reviewing those. I might determine it's not even worth talking about, but it will be kind of our grocery list, so to speak, right? Of what we're going to go get. And then another one from MinMax's Ben Hansen. He said, can you put like a post-credits spoiler part of the show at the end where you do reveal some of the spoilers from each book, like Thor? I think a lot of people wanted to know what happened in that. Mm-hmm. That comic, and we just kind of danced around it. It's not a bad idea. We'll see. We'll see how this goes here. We'll see how much spoiler territory we get into. One thing we are adding for sure is the official description from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, you name it, of the book, so you can get an idea of what it's going to be about before we break down the review. The books this week, I would say, didn't have as many big surprises there. And the one that we're kicking off with, I didn't care for the big book of the week. Iron Man 2020, the official description from Marvel reads as such. The future is now. Artificial intelligence presents a clear and present danger to humanity and must be brought to heel. The robot rebellion battles for the establishment of robot rights. And Arno Stark is Iron Man. This is written by Dan Slott and artist Pete Woods. Art is fine. The artistic direction, the colors, all that stuff work.
Mm-hmm.
Don't like how it starts with the new design for Iron Man with like the steampunk clockwork.
Like the cogs for the arms.
Giant. It looks so weird. Kyle, I don't know if you felt the same way I did, but I just, every page I turned on this one, I was just kind of more and more kind of let down by the direction it was going in. And how it just seems like this kind of weird sector of the Marvel Universe is just kind of starting to suddenly boil up here with these robots being everywhere. They have like their own nightclubs, their
mm-hmm.
own security forces. They have S.H.I.E.L.D., I guess. Like there's a bunch of Nick Fury robots running around. I know this happens a lot in comics where they want to create a new kind of thing, but this one, I'm just not digging it.
Yeah, I think the first page that you open up to shows this giant robot that's kind of over the entire planet Earth. Come to find out that is one of Arno's dreams that he's having.
Let's talk about that, by the way. Arno.
Okay.
So he, I'll read the beginning of the book here. This is the first page before you even get the title of the book. Tony Stark revealed to the world that he is an AI construct in an artificial body, and the true Tony Stark is dead. His adoptive brother, Arno Stark, and Arno's business partner, Sunset Bane, used Tony's admission to seize control of Stark Unlimited and all its assets, including the Iron Man name. New year, new Iron Man.
I thought it was going to be off to an awesome start seeing that giant like robot taking over the entire planet. And then come to find out it's his dream. And then it goes on to kind of his home life and then switches over to him in one of Iron Man's suits. I don't know which one of the marks it is. I don't know if it's one that he made up.
It's a new one for 2020. Yeah.
Yeah. And to be honest, I was confused most of the comic. Do I care about Arno? Do I care about the whole robot rebellion that's going on? Robot rights? Should robots get rights? I don't know, man.
Making you think.
Yeah. But I just don't know if I care about it. That probably sounds a little harsh. It's just, it didn't capture my attention, and it was just kind of, it was different.
Yeah, should I be yelling at my Roomba when it goes over my cords, you know? Like, when it drags something across the floor, I don't want it to. Maybe not. if you're interested in a question like that, maybe you should check out Iron Man 2020. And moving forward, you know, this thing's going to go on for a while. There's going to be, if you look at the back of the book, issue two, there's Machine Man 2020, Forceworks 2020, Rescue 2020, a bunch of Iron Man 2020s. That's the core book. Iron Age, Forceworks, and Wolverine. There's a big reveal in this book about Wolverine, which is really silly and kind of fits the tone. And oh man, the last reveal too. It's not for me.
Do I even care about that? I'm done. No, yeah. I didn't care about that either.
I'm done. I'm out. I'm giving this one a. I'm gonna be harsh, man.
Here we go. Let's hear it.
A 5 out of 10. That's him cratering.
Yes, yes. I was not as harsh. I rated this at a 7.
Wow. You say it's okay.
It's all right. I mean, I want there to be more hope for this toward like later on into the series, but right now it wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
Okay, I'm going to change my score. It's going to be a 5.1.
Okay.
That's I know good. We were doing 5.25s and all that, you know, like every quarter, but I'm going to give it a hair more. So it's our scale. Like, we could do this. It's our own scale.
It sucks, but it's all right. Is that what 5.1 is? Or is
the colors were nice. The cover, especially with the pink, very neat.
Okay. Sucks is another harsh word. I don't know. It's its own thing. I think the best way to put it is Iron Man 2020 is its own thing.
Yes, it is not. If you're familiar with the movies and all that stuff, like Kyle's perspective, you're going to be in shock by just how different it is. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to take a look at Kelly Thompson's Jessica Jones Blind Spot. Here's the official description. Jessica Jones was once the costume superhero known as Jewel. She sucked at it. Now she's a private investigator at her own firm, Alias Investigations. Guess what? She sucks less at that. With the Purple Man gone, her relationship with her husband, Luke Cage, and their daughter, Danielle, is better than ever. But her past always comes knocking. And when a woman whose case she fumbled winds up dead in her office floor, Jessica goes from private investigator to prime suspect. Can she find the real killer and clear her name? This is new as a physical comic, but it actually came out last year as a digital comic. I have not read any of Marvel's digital stuff. It's awesome. I really love it. And if the name Kelly Thompson is familiar to you listeners out there, we reviewed her first issue of Star last week. Kyle, you and I loved that.
Yes.
And one thing you're going to start to, as a reader, start to develop is kind of this rhythm when you go to the comic store for not only looking at a cover of a comic that you're excited about, like seeing the name Captain America or Batman, but then you look for the writer name, like you're really looking for that or the artist's name. Mm-hmm. And you'll be like, oh, I'm not interested in Martian Manhunter, but hey, guess what? Kelly Thompson's writing a new series. Well, I'm going to give that a shot.
Yeah.
So it's really neat that once you really start to understand who's doing what and where they're at, a lot of writers will take on 3 to 4 to 5 different books a month. Mm-hmm. Artists can't do that. You know, usually they do one. Mm-hmm. But you'll start to be able to look and go, yes, I'm grabbing that. Or you'll see someone's name that you don't like and be like, I'm really interested in a new Batman book right now, but no, I'm not buying his book.
Yeah.
Jessica Jones, Blind Spot. I like it. Kyle, where do you sit on this one?
Interesting take on Jessica Jones. I think Kelly jumps right into the series by introducing familiar characters to the universe, like Luke Cage and Murdoch.
Yeah.
The comic seemed to start a little slow, and I think it was due to some of the flashbacks that take place in it, but something really crazy happens at the end, and I have no idea how they're going to continue it to the next issue.
This is a spoiler. We can't give that one away.
No.
Yeah, it is bonkers, but at the same time, the book starts with a flash forward, maybe. You don't really know what's going on.
Yep.
This is a series that Brian Michael Bendis, a character that Brian Michael Bendis had shepherded on for years and years and years. And for Kelly Thompson to come in and kind of take up the mantle, that was a big deal. Like, no one else really wrote Jessica Jones on her own. I thought she did a phenomenal job. And I really like how she gets into Jessica's head to show you how she reads people.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see, like, it'll be a full page kind of image of a character she's looking at. And there'll be like almost little Polaroids over sections of their body.
Yeah.
Where she's calling out certain things that she just sees on them. I thought that was really cool. It flowed nicely. There's a lot of stuff that's left open to interpretation in this one. You can kind of knock it for that a little bit. But those things, as you just said, make you want to see what happens next, yeah. right? Like, it yeah. is the ultimate cliffhanger. It's almost like, well, there's no Why? Way this could happen because you see yeah. the next page. Well, yeah, you see the next page and you're like, well, that kind of answers something. But
mm-hmm.
at the same time, you want to know how that happens too, right? I'm going to give this one a 8 out of 10. It's a fine start. I do want to continue on. I don't know if I will, just given that there's just so many comics out there. That's another thing that you're going to need to get into a rhythm of is just you can't buy everything. Yeah, I usually try to keep it around 5 to 6 issues a week. I think that seems pretty doable. Reading one a day, maybe. Sometimes on a Saturday, I'll binge them all or something like that. But that's kind of like my comfort zone. And everybody's going to figure it out on their own, obviously. But for us, we're going to try 5 to 6. That kind of falls into my wheelhouse. Kyle, what did you think of Jessica Jones here?
I am in the same ballpark as you. I gave it an 8 out of 10.
All right. What did you like?
The very end of it.
It was made like by the last page?
Yeah, the artwork was pretty incredible. Like we were talking about earlier with the certain pages that had the pictures describing little things on each character. There were cool things that I have not seen yet, but the part that really got to me was the end, and I feel like I need to see how it's going to continue.
We're, again, very Marvel-heavy this week. I did read the new issue of Nightwing, thinking that might be a good jumping-on spot. And here's DC's official description of that. Being a superhero often means layers of identities. For Rick Grayson, he once had a life as a sidekick to Batman, a life he forgot when a terrible gunshot wound erased his memories. When his long-lost grandfather, who is also a super assassin called Talon, returned to his life and implanted false memories into his brain, another layer was added. Now with Talon vanquished, Rick Grayson has to shake loose the truth. Is he the man he had created for himself? Or is there still some of that old Nightwing lurking inside of his head? Even if he wanted to, could Rick be Nightwing again when 4 other people have put on the mask and picked up where he left off? There is some clarity that's given to the series there, but it is not a good jumping on point. It looks like issue 69 will be, so we might check back in on Nightwing next week. But everything else we have is Marvel-centric. The next one I want to get to is my favorite book. It's not from this week. We're doing a little bit of catch-up for you listeners out there, so if you do go to the comic book store, you still can find this one. This is, Kyle, why don't you set it up?
Okay. This is also probably my favorite book that we've read this week. Hawkeye.
Yeah, Hawkeye Freefall.
So the official description, Marvel description for Hawkeye Freefall is, when a mysterious and ruthless new Ronin starts tearing a destructive path through the city, suspicion immediately falls on Hawkeye. But Clint has more to worry about than who's wearing his old costume. After a clash with the Hood ends badly, Hawkeye gives himself a new mission that will place him in the crosshairs of one of New York's most dangerous villains. Hawkeye's mission and Ronin's secret plans will set them on a collision course that only one of them will walk away from. My only experience with Hawkeye is in Marvel movies. So
you didn't like him until Endgame?
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly. I actually kind of wrote notes down. For that, I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't be too harsh on him because I did like him in Endgame. But yeah, I didn't really have much interest for Hawkeye in the movies. But this comic, man, this is, I don't know, it was a lot of fun to read. I feel like it had great humor. I feel like it had great action in it. And it was really good. but I'm trying to get the artist and the writer.
Oh, I got those here. Yeah, we got Matthew Rosenberg. He's the writer. And Otto Schmidt is our artist on this one. They work very well together in this comic. And I'll just kind of build on what you're saying. I completely agree with everything there. One, it is okay to make fun of Hawkeye because he's bringing a bow and arrow to a superhero fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got guys flying around in armor. You got super soldiers, people that can turn into beasts. And he's just kind of there. It's like making fun of Hanzo in Overwatch. That's legit as well.
Yeah, sure.
But the one thing I'll say, Rosenberg really gets into Hawkeye's head. Like, you really feel like you're reading this character. And that's rare. You know, like, that's when comics are really, really good. Like, you feel like, oh, I understand Bruce Wayne. I know where he's at. They immediately get that across here with Clint. And you just like him. Like, you like how he's thinking. You think he's clever. He's a little frazzled. There's something off with him. But you're along for that ride. And they do a nice job of kind of revealing those bits as it goes along. It's a smart story as well. I thought it was very clever in how the other characters kind of get woven into this are skeptical, like a little skeptical of him. And I love how he treats the big bad in this book, which is the Hood.
Yeah.
He has no cares in the world about this guy as a threat. And he makes that very apparent as much as he can. And it's fun to read that stuff.
I almost want to say his personality is somewhat similar to that of like Deadpool, just very kind of sarcastic and very just doesn't give a crap.
Yeah, just not as comedic, right? Like, he's not going for jokes. He's just kind of, he just doesn't care. And yeah, I love it. I that's a book I'm going to pick up. That and Thor and Star of our comics so far that we've kind of read and given you reviews for. Those are the three that I'm really interested in seeing where they go.
Hawkeye Freefall is sitting at an 8.5.
I'm going to go higher than that. I'm going to give it a 9. A flat 9. No, a 9.1.
Oh, okay.
No, yeah, we'll just give it a, I'll just give it a 9 and just say that it's a hell of a start for a character like both of us. He's okay. He's fine. But now I kind of really care about him after that one issue, and I want to see where it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. It's this was a good read this week.
The last book we're going to review for you is Runes of Ravencroft, Sabretooth, Issue 1. And here's Marvel's description. The history of the Ravencroft Institute for the Criminally Insane has been shrouded in mystery for years. No longer. In the wake of absolute carnage, the facility's past has started to unravel, and in doing so has revealed hidden chapters in the lives of some of the Marvel Universe's most recognizable heroes and villains. Runes of Ravencroft spins out of Absolute Carnage, the Donny Cates story that we told you about last week. And it explores basically Marvel's Arkham Asylum. It's an insane asylum from 1909. And a lot of bad things have happened here. It's kind of been derelict and not used. But now Reed Richards, and after Absolute Carnage's events, and a bunch of the heroes have kind of come together. Even Wilson Fisk, Mayor Wilson Fisk, is in on this, on kind of coming here to explore it and see how viable it is as kind of a place. And they go in the basement, and that's a bad idea, Kyle.
Yeah, it really was.
There's all sorts of horrors in there from way back when. And some really bad ideas in terms of concepts for a comic book, I think, too, in saying that Wolverine and Sabretooth had their first ever fight down there in, like, 1909.
Mm-hmm.
And Sabretooth maybe thought that Wolverine was Jack the Ripper? Did I read that right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. That's what I got.
And then Captain America wasn't the first Captain America. There was a Captain America in the Revolutionary War. Did I read that right, too?
Yeah. Yep.
And then on this same spot was the Headless Horseman, and apparently Cthulhu showed up here. And then something with the Hulk, and then aliens invaded. And yeah, it got crazy. It got really crazy. I was along for the ride when they went down in the basement, and I was like, okay, this has some some kind of cool horror vibes. It's different. It even goes crazier than what I just said. They open up a vault and it just gets silly what's inside of there. I was laughing out loud as I read this.
It's like watching a Scooby-Doo episode.
Yeah, it was very strange. The interesting thing about these Runes of Ravenloft stories, this isn't the first one, but it is a good jumping on point if you like camp and you want to see something just bonkers in the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. You can begin with this Sabretooth issue. There was one before it that kind of set things up, saying that Cletus Kasady, who was Carnage, his great-grandfather or something like that, was tied in with this organization or this institution. But this is one where they kind of really start exploring it, and yikes, yikes, mm-hmm. yikes, yikes. It is, you know, I'll say this. I wasn't bored.
No.
I really got my money's worth in just looking at this thing going, what? The next issue, the tease, is Captain America versus Dracula. And that will be another number one as well. I think it's just Runes of Ravenloft, Dracula. I'm going to give this one, Kyle. I'm a little harsh this week. I don't know what's up.
But, let's hear it.
I mean, this is how it's going to go. You know, you take chances, and sometimes you swing and miss. I'm going to give this one a 6.5.
Okay. Okay, that's not too shabby.
It's not terrible, but...
No, yeah. Definitely not. Definitely not. So, I do think that it kind of did a good job at mashing classic horror movie feels to a modern superhero comic.
Oh, very but it, nice.
Like you said, it was very campy and... It was entertaining. I don't know if I really cared about it. I don't know if I would ever recommend this to people, but if you want something extra, if you want something that's just, like you said, kind of out of your normal superhero vibes, this is not a terrible pickup. But I did enjoy it more than Iron Man 2020.
Me too. Me too. What do you give it?
7.1.
Okay, now you're just mocking my new scale. All
right, I'm sorry. I had 7.25.
All right, 7.25. I did take a look at another book that I thought we'd do as catch-up. There's the new Deadpool series from, hey, guess who? Kelly Thompson. Here's Marvel's description for Deadpool number one. Deadpool's newest mercenary job has him going after the King of Monsters, who has claimed a new kingdom for his monstrous subjects, on Staten Island. But you know what they say, when you come at the king, you better not miss. The merc with the mouth finds himself neck deep in political intrigue, monster law, and a monster hunter out for blood. It's like The Crown, but with even more swords and monsters. Can Deadpool's smooth charisma and diplomacy allow him to keep his head, or will he be royally screwed? I'm just going to kind of give you the setup in her own words at the back of the book. It's kind of cool. She issues a statement to the readers, and she says, hey, true believers, I tried to write this little intro thing like 5 times, but I kept having to delete it and start again because it all sounded so cheesy, and I rambled on about what a dream come true it is to get to write Wade. That's Wade Wilson, Deadpool. Mm-hmm. She went on to say that it's difficult to do something like this, so she tried something completely new. As a result of this, coming up with something new and interesting to do with him was a big challenge. I'm a big fan of monsters, though, and monsters are all like Wade, very bendy. They're big and bold and fun and scary and also really convenient literal metaphors. So this, as soon as you open the book, it's like Wade Wilson getting chopped in two, and then he's like talking to a bird dude that looks like a chocobo from Final Fantasy.
Yep.
And then... there's just monsters and creatures everywhere, and you realize he's like in a fantasy land. But then other characters start showing up, especially in issue 2. There's 2 issues out now. And it's just weird and wacky and way different. And I don't think it really gels with Deadpool too well, because I think part of what makes him interesting is how dangerous he is around other humans. Mm-hmm. When he's like standing next to a chicken or like a baby shark or something like that, I'm just not feeling that same kind of tension with him as kind of a potential threat. He's just kind of there in these books. That said, they are kind of fun. Kraven the Hunter shows up, which is neat. I like him a lot. You know what? I'm actually going to review it. I'm going to give it a 7.5.
Okay. Wow.
I'll give it a 7.5. I know you didn't get through it, Kyle, but I guess it's better than the other 2 books we read.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I prefer him in a modern kind of real world setting. I like that they're taking a chance trying something new, but it's just not for me.
Well, that's not a terrible score at all, by any means.
No, it's okay. It's just not a high, the best of the Deadpool books. There's a lot of great Deadpool stories, and this is just kind of middle of the road.
It does kind of blow my mind that we're only in episode 2 and 3 out of the 8, 9 books that we've talked about total have been written by Kelly Thompson.
Yeah, isn't that neat?
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll get used to this, and you know, there'll be times where she'll sign a contract with DC and all of a sudden like everything you know is turned upside down because she's now writing the heroes that someone else was writing, and it happens a lot. Creators bounce around. Donnie Cates, who did Guardians of the Galaxy, knocked it out of the park for 12 issues. He's done. So he went on to Thor. Someone else is taking over Guardians of the Galaxy. So that happens all the time.
That's pretty neat.
It is. At the same time, you want them to stay on the books forever. And it every once in a while, once out of every 10,000 comic books that come out, there's an Ultimate Spider-Man that comes along and you have Brian Michael Bendis on it for over 100 consecutive issues, and it's the best thing ever. Or Why the Last Man, Preacher, stuff like that will happen, but it's rare. It really is rare, especially in the Marvel and DC universe. If you're into superheroes, that rarely ever happens. It's sad. I wish the creators would stick around and see them through, but it's a business. They have other interests. You know how it goes. Keep moving.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for our reviews. Let's take a look at what's coming next week. All right. The big book for January 22nd is DC. So here we go. We'll have a big one for DC. This is not a new number one. It is what you'd kind of call a anniversary issue. This is issue 750 of Wonder Woman. And they usually treat these as huge historic events or new jumping on points for people. I think either one of those kind of falls under our criteria, Kyle. I think people are going to want to hear what happens if there's a big reveal in this issue. It's 96 pages of a comic. It's going to be $10. It is going to tie in with DC's long, exhaustively long-running Year of the Villain story that's been going on. I don't know. It feels like as long as New 52 at this point. Every week you see it, it's like, oh, more of this stuff. But we'll see how that goes. I'm excited for that. You know, a lot of creators involved in this one. Should be interesting. We'll see how that kind of goes.
And it sounds like a pretty big size book.
Yeah, also from DC, we have Batman 87, Batgirl 43. Again, we're not looking at a lot of jumping on points. Birds of Prey Giant number one. Again, those are those huge 70, 80 page books. Detective Comics 1019. You know, these are not books we will be reviewing, but just giving you a rundown of what is coming. Superman 19. And over at Dynamite Comics, there's a new number one here. And you know what? We're going to talk about it at the end of the episode. We're going to have our first comic creator interview at the end of this episode, Kyle.
What?
Yes. should be interesting. Red Sonja, Age of Chaos. That is one of the books we'll be taking a look at. Also over at IDW, Ghostbusters Year One. Kyle, same writer, same person we're going to be talking to.
Mind blown.
Yeah, he has two number ones coming out this week, which is perfect for us.
Yeah.
And he's writing Ghostbusters stories, like new Ghostbusters stuff. That is so cool.
Yeah.
So we're going to pick his brain, go into that. Over at Marvel, again, tons and tons of stuff that we could go into. I teased that there's going to be a new writer on Guardians of the Galaxy. And guess what? It's Al Ewing. That book comes out on the 22nd. So we will be reviewing that one, Kyle. And then also there is Atlantis Attacks. Everybody forgets about Namor. Even the people over at the Marvel Cinematic Universe don't know what to do with Namor. But there is a big Atlantean underwater water kingdom war going on, and we'll explore that in the first issue. And if you like what's going on in Venom right now, they are adding another series. There's going to be Web of Venom, the first issue, which has Goblin Child and the Son of Venom. And we're going to take a look at that one as well.
Huh.
And we did have some people ask about Titan Comics. There's a new Blade Runner. I will flip through that on the comic stand and see if that's something that we want to take a look at. We're always open to exploring new things, taking a shot. That's the great thing about comics, by the way. You can get through them very quickly. You know, it's 22 pages, maybe 20 minutes, 15, and you're done. And it's funny because I always hear a lot of people saying, like, they'll go see a movie and they're like, ah, I just want more of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Marvel's pumping them out, but they could do one a month or one a week and it'd be amazing. And I just keep telling them, I'm like, they're already doing it in comic books. Yeah. They're just as good as the movies, sometimes better, right? Like Endgame, epic, epic, epic. But back in the day, Infinity Gauntlet was that, right? It was mm-hmm. just a gargantuan, mind-blowing story at the time. You just didn't have books that shook things up that much or had the big events. Now it seems like the events are once a month, and they've kind of stolen some of the thunder from them. But they're doing such a good job with the characters. Like we saw today, the best Hawkeye story we've read in a while, right? Like this is a better version of Hawkeye than you ever saw on the silver screen. If you like yep. that character, definitely read this one.
Check it out.
And there's not much going on at Image Comics right now. And that's kind of it for our week. Oh, one thing I will point out, Transformers Volume 1, The World in Your Eyes, hardcover coming out. This is the new relaunch that happened about a year ago. Fantastic. I'm reading every issue of this. I love it. If you read the old Transformers comics, this is kind of like a new beginning, a new take on it. It's an origin story before the Decepticons even exist. You actually get to see how they come up with their name and their symbol. And it is very much a political book on Cybertron. It's expensive. This hardcover, this will get you the first, I believe, 12 issues, is $50.
Oh,
ouch.
Yes, that is pricey.
And that is it for our look at what's coming on January 22nd. Let's move on to our interview. And for our first interview ever on the Spectacular Comic Book Podcast, we have Eric Burnham. Hello, sir. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. We're excited to talk to you because our focus on the show is new number ones or jumping on points for readers. It's always intimidating to get into comics. And next week, January, 22nd, you have two books coming out. What can we look forward to?
Oh, yeah. Two books. The first one is Ghostbusters Year One, number one. It's four issues, and each issue focuses on one of the Ghostbusters during the in-between of the movie, things that were mentioned but not seen, such as, Winston Zeddemore was hired, but then we didn't see him actually do anything until they went and fought the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. He had to have gone off on some busts. It was implied. Now we get to show his first one. And right. things like that will be going on through the miniseries, but that's the first issue. That's what it's going to be. But they're all, you know, kind of standalone with some connective tissue.
And we'll dive into that one a little yes. deeper in a second. What's book number two?
Book number two, Red Sonja and the Age of Chaos in a six-issue crossover from Dynamite.
Very cool. For people that read comic books, they always wonder how people get started. How did you get started with all these companies working on huge properties like Transformers and Ghostbusters?
Well, it's a story I've told many times, and I've gotten it almost down to a science. What it was I wrote for fun, and I worked in radio. Then I got laid off. I was laid off. It was a couple of years before I found anything else. And in that time that I wasn't doing anything, besides, you know, a little bit of writing on the side there, I was on the internet and I was talking with folks and hanging out on message boards. This was way before the social media made everything a lot easier. And we talked comics, and that was how I kept up because I don't have a local comic shop. So I kept up in that way, kept up with the stories by talking to people and looking online. Anyway, the group of us that were together were talking and in some cases complaining about what we liked, what we didn't like, about what was coming out in books at that time. Someone said, could we do better? Let's put our money where our mouth is. And so we did an anthology. Put together an anthology in about 8 months for a 80-page book, which is ridiculously fast. And we had so much fun with that. We did it again. We did six anthologies all told and spun it off.
What was the focus of these books, by the way?
I mean, it was really just eclectic. It was whatever somebody had in mind to do, which, you know, was great, but also hurt us in selling because here's a I was doing an 8-page silly little comic feature, and then there was a traditional superhero feature. There was a violent pulp feature. There was horror, and there was, you know, there was a little bit of everything with all kinds of styles and all kinds of tones. So this part of the book would be perfectly fine for children. This part of the book is absolutely not fine for children, but you can't split the book. So, you know, I mean, we had a few issues like that when we were at the conventions selling them. But overall, you know, the quality was pretty high, and we had a good time doing it. Like I said, we spun it out into a company for a couple of years, which was Shooting Star Comics, published our stuff. And we were the ones who published the first miniseries by Tom Waltz. And when he was done with that, he's a San Diego guy. IDW is out in San Diego, and they were interested in collecting that miniseries. And that's how Tom met them. Eventually, they needed to take on some more editors and reached out to Tom. Tom liked my work from the anthology. He got a kick out of it, so he offered me a chance to pitch on some of the anthologies that he was working on. I got one there, and then he said, would you like to try this toy tie-in called Nanovore? It's kind of a Pokemon kind of a thing. He asked me if I'd like to try that. I said, sure, I'll try that. I did that. Then he said, do you like the A-Team? I do like the A-Team. Can you have something written really fast? Because we have to have the books done and in trade paperback before the movie comes out. He asked me on Halloween. The movie was coming out in June. That's a short turnaround time for comics, but we got that done. And then he took over the editing of Ghostbusters, and I really wanted to do that. So I bugged him until the queue was empty, and he allowed me to do the Infestation crossover that IDW did. It went over really well, and he asked me to pitch it on going from there, and I've been working on Ghostbusters ever since.
IDW, by the way, has the best paper in the business. I know that's a weird thing to say, but whenever you pick up one of those books, it just feels like quality, and the colors jump from them. It's amazing, the product that they put out each month.
Oh, yeah, it's good paper, and you know, I'll go one further. They're monthly comics are good, but their trade collections are phenomenal. The packaging that they put on those, it's just amazing. We a couple of years ago, we did a Ghostbusters annual, and they did some spot gloss on there, and it was just it was gorgeous. So I mean, the guys putting together the trades are they're doing some wonderful stuff that is attractive on the shelf, which is a weird thing to say.
And it's a new thing that's happening now too. You look at like DC with the Black series, just to kind of go off on a side tangent here, but those are beautiful books as well. So there is something happening there where they are attracting people with comics that feel better and look better and feel like a higher quality. But back to Ghostbusters, I'm curious. I've always wondered this. You said you had a fast turnaround on a comic. What's a normal turnaround? Like for this Ghostbusters Year One series, what is how far out did you write those?
Well, there is the shortest amount of turnaround that there can be is it takes, you know, the average artist roughly 4 to 5 weeks to draw a book. And then, you know, if it's printed overseas for, you know, for to if there's enough time to print it overseas and be a little cheaper, I should say, a little more economical than printing domestically, that takes, you know, a month. And I know that many many publishers, they split it. You know, maybe one issue will be domestic and one issue will be overseas, depending on how much lead time they have. And, you know, it's everything goes to making something more profitable. But, you know, so a month, give it a month for printing. Sometimes it can take less. I mean, if you print domestically, you can have it done in a week. But 10 weeks, you know, cutting it to the bone, it could be done.
Okay. And I've been curious about getting a license, what kind of interaction you have with the property holder. Like this is, what is it? Columbia Pictures,
Sony,
Ghost Corps.
Sony and Ghost Corps.
Oh, yeah. Sony now. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it varies from project to project. I've done a lot of licensed stuff, and some people are very hands-on. Some are less hands-on. Some are only hands-on if you start going into the wrong direction. There was a thing that I worked on early on where, say, I got the script done, they liked it, they approved it, but then somebody working on a novel, a kid's novel, would come up with something that they also liked, but it contradicted what I wrote, so they would say, hey, wait, go back and rewrite that, but you already said it was done. You know, I mean, that kind of a thing. That's come up. That's an extreme case. Sometimes they're very nitpicky. I don't like how you, the point of view that you're suggesting here, whether it's implicit or not. Some people don't like that and will tweak it and have it be tweaked, I should say, until it's in their eyes where they want it. But for the most part, it's 90% of the time, it's very much, this is what we would like to see when using our characters. This is what we would not like to see. Stay within that sandbox and you're in good shape.
How cool is that? You get to write canonical Ghostbusters stories.
Until it's not. I mean, well,
that's what happened to Star Wars.
Exactly. It happened with Star Wars. So, I mean, if the new movie comes out and contradicts everything that I've done, then it's no longer canon. If the new movie comes out and does not contradict anything I've done, then, you know, people can decide either way for themselves.
Obviously, I'm not super intact with the comic book scene, but I do want to know, like, what was your inspiration for becoming a comic book writing your own comics?
Well, I like writing. I like writing for an audience. And, I mean, you can do prose. The flash fiction on the internet, it's the equivalent of fanfic, even if it is not fanfiction. But, you know, you can write prose and put it online. I was, and still am, big into movies. I wrote screenplays and plays in high school and just beyond. But that is more difficult to relate the story unless you have a whole group of people helping you do it. Comics, you still need a group of people to put together the story and get it out to an audience. But if worse comes to worse, and I had enough time, I could do the whole process myself and make a story that would be recognizable as a comic that people could experience in that way. So the you know, the visuals are there and like they would be, say, with a movie. But it's a form of storytelling that I like. And I appreciate the collaborative nature quite a bit, especially the folks that I've gotten to work with. But yeah, it's just a matter of doing something that's not just prose. I like putting it together, and comics were a much easier route than making a movie. You know, finishing a film, even a short, and getting that in such a way that it's ready to show to an audience, is when I started making comics, was a whole lot harder. It's gotten easier, but not by much. So yeah, it's just I gravitated to comics partly for that reason, and also because I love them. I've loved them from go. So it's just a viable way to tell a story.
You know, you're obviously very experienced at what you do and writing comics and creating material in general. Do you have any like words of wisdom, any kind of pro tips for anybody that is aspiring to maybe want to jump into this?
The biggest advice that I give as far as writing any kind of a story is to finish it, which sounds completely obvious, but it doesn't always happen. I mean, I still have a bunch of half-finished stories, so I don't always follow my own advice, but finishing it is the big thing. Once you have a finished story, you can work it and beat it more into shape and make it better. If it's prose, you can show it to somebody immediately. If it's a comic script, you can get an artist going immediately, you know, or interested, you can seek one out. But yeah, no, nothing can be done unless it's finished. It doesn't matter how great the first third of a story is. It does you no good if it's not done. So yeah, finishing the story is probably the number one thing for advice that I give to people who write comics or who just want to write comics, is I tell them to draw one of their own scripts. Doesn't need to be something that anybody ever sees, but there's nothing that teaches you better what you can't do than having to draw it for yourself at least once. I do some drawing, and the first thing that somebody asked me to draw for them was a description. The description on the page was a man. He's walking through the bar. He's looking at people. He's seeing them. He knows who he's looking at as he passes them walking through the bar. That was panel one of seven panels. You can't have multiple things going on in one panel. And you don't necessarily know that if you're just writing, because that would fly without any issue in a screenplay. So those are the two, you know, kind of simple, obvious and not obvious at the same time, piece of advice that I give to people who want to write comics.
How much back and forth you have with the artist as it's being developed?
Varies by the story. There are some things that, for instance, on Ghostbusters, Dan Schoening, he wants to add, and we'll go back and forth about that. Some things he wants to draw and doesn't want to draw. Very rarely in the almost decade that we've done this, maybe like three times, he has not drawn something that the story has needed, and he's had to go back and do some redrawing. But I mean, super rare that that happens with him. But we discuss the kind of stuff that he wants to do. And if I can accommodate that in the story, then absolutely 100% it will happen. It would work differently if we were working on, say, a creator-owned project, or even a directly for somebody who owned a property, as opposed to what we're doing now with a licensed book. We have to go through an editor and the licensor. So I have to write the script first so that the licensor can approve it and make sure that there are no notes before it goes to be drawn. And so there's not as much back and forth as there might be if we were working on the whole story. And then he might, if it was something else, he might call me up in the middle of a sequence and suggest a whole bunch of changes. And then I could rewrite the script from there. But when you have to have somebody else approve it first, it's not as easy to do that. So
yeah, you'd have to go back to the licensor with
correct.
Any changes.
Yeah. Then, so, right? I mean, the script has to be done and approved first. And once it's approved, no major changes can be made, which that's how it is with this kind of thing. With other comics, it's different. So, but I mean, I like to have collaboration. I like for Dan to suggest things that he wants to draw or ideas for jokes. And the same from Luis, our colorist, Luis Antonio Delgado, who is amazing. And the editor, Tom Waltz, he'll throw ideas in there. And that's a good thing because nobody can think of everything. And if somebody else comes up with a really solid idea that I work into the script, I look good. They look good. Everybody looks good. So the, good ideas make everybody look better. So, there's no sense in being precious about where they come from.
Right. And Ghostbusters sounds awesome. We're going to review that next week, by the way. So you might want to tune into that episode. See how you fared. Tell us about Red Sonja.
Okay, well, not the kind of thing that I ever expected to be writing. Most of the stuff that I had been working on up to the point I was first asked about Red Sonja was very much more humorous. There's a little bit of action because I did do some Ninja Turtles stuff, but for the most part, it was still a lot more joking and not pulp fantasy like Sonja is. But she's just so much fun to write. And it's action movie kind of stuff. And I have a blast writing Sonja. And how this miniseries came out was I literally got an email from the editor. Hey, do you want to write a comic? Here's what we're thinking. Red Sonja, the Chaos characters, they meet, they fight. You've got 100 pages to do it. What, Well, 120.
Does that mean you're going into like
yes.
Evil Ernie and stuff like that?
Yes,
too?
Evil Ernie is there. Okay, cool. Purgatory is there. Lady Demon, Mistress Hell, everybody.
Oh, you're bringing
Jade.
Everybody in.
I wasn't able to use there wasn't enough space to use everybody as much as it would have been fun to use everybody. Plus, sometimes that's just how a story works. The plot, you de-emphasize one or more emphasis goes to another. Just its ensembles are tricky that way. And it's also technically a Red Sonja story. So she also has to be in the lead. So, balancing act, Chastity and Bad Kitty. So, yes, all those characters will be in the book. And it's all taking place. They're all the Chaos characters are going back to Red Sonja's time, the Hyborian age, the barbarian times, and that's where it's going to be taking place. So it is going to be a fun, ridiculous, gory, pulpy book. Jonathan Lau is drawing it, and I just actually today got the finished copy. Just a couple hours ago, finished copy of the first book.
Oh, cool!
It's amazing. He did so much with the story. It looks beautiful.
And obviously, Ghostbusters, you're going to want to see the first movie before you read the comic books. Is there any homework people would need to do? For
oh gosh, I hope not. I tried to include. Yes.
So you wrote it as like a
no. Hopefully everything that is needed to understand what is going on is within the pages of that first issue. You're introduced to the characters. Here's who they are. Here's what they're about. Here's what they do. Here's who wants to kill this person. And here's who wants to kill that person. And here's how they want to do it. And here's all that stuff. So hopefully, like I said, it will be clear enough that anybody who has never heard of Red Sonja or any of the Chaos characters should not be lost. Knock wood.
Well, thank you for your time, Eric, and being the
first
interview on our
me,
show.
Pleasure to be here.
For all of our listeners out there, you can find two of Eric's books, new books, on the shelf next week. And where else can they find what you've done? Is it, obviously Wikipedia is a good source, but do you have a website or anything you'd like to promote that rounds up all of your
collections? Sure, I have a list of everything that I've done going back on my website, which is burnamania.com. Probably easier to go to the website from my Twitter. It's you know, make sure that there's no misspellings that way. And my Twitter is just twitter.com/Eric Burnham. And, you know, super easy to find me that way.
Excellent. Well, thank you again, sir.
Andy, earlier at the beginning of the episode, you had mentioned some of the suggestions that were given to us for future episodes.
Yeah.
I just want you to know that one of the suggestions that you had mentioned about giving a list of future comics that we will be looking over was from Jeremy Whiten. And let me tell you this. Jeremy is from South Australia.
Whoa!
We've got listeners
around the world
from South. Yeah, that's bonkers.
You know what, Jeremy? Write in again. I would love to know what the comic scene is like down there. Are we getting the same books? Are you getting them the same time frame? All that stuff. We'd love to hear. Is there a different hero down there? Let us know.
Ooh, that's good. I don't know. Cool Australian hero.
Yeah, it could be. Like, there's a lot of. There's a big European comic scene. You know, Judge Dredd, stuff like that eventually came over here. I'm curious what it's like in Australia. To his point, the books we're going to read are Atlantis from Marvel, Venom, The Web of Venom, and Wonder Woman for sure. So those three are on our must-read list. Everything else, we'll dabble. We'll see what we should be reviewing to kind of give you, again, 5 to 6.
Yeah. So, yeah. Thank you, Jeremy, for sending us that email. And also, we have previously mentioned being able to send us voice messages on Anchor. So just like our listener this week, who doesn't give us their name, but message from 006 Productions. I'm guessing that's something they're associated with. But just check out this voice message.
Love the first show, guys. Great work. Looking forward to what you have coming next. As someone who doesn't have the time to check out every comic book that comes out, I appreciate you doing the hard work for us. So appreciate the recommendations and good luck.
That was very nice.
Yes, yes, that's just awesome. So yeah, you can send us voice messages. We want to hear from you. We want you to ask us questions. We want you to
be a part of the show.
Say hi. Yeah, yes, totally. We want to hear from you. So head on over to our Anchor page, anchor.fm. The Comic Book Podcast, I think, is what the link is under. Let me double check that.
And you know what we could do down the road is, let's say you do read Thor. Maybe we turned you onto a book. You can kind of give us a review of that. And if enough time has passed, we can maybe get into that spoiler territory of talking about why that book was so impactful. Ooh. You know, that's a way where we can kind of bring it back. Kill two birds with one stone, maybe. Give you a little spoiler. But at the same time, if you go to buy it, it might be sold out already. So
that's true. So, yeah. So anchor.fm, search The Spectacular Comic Book Podcast. You'll see a link, a button that will link you to the voice message section. And let's hear from you. We've got a lot of questions from different listeners. So you think there's a possibility we could do like a listener's email section segment?
We could. If we get enough and we think they're good, we can definitely do that.
Very cool. So yeah, thank you so much for listening. If you want to get a hold of us, like I said, Anchor, you can email us at thecomicbookpod@gmail.com and connect with us through social media, Twitter, at thecomicbookpod, and Facebook at The Spectacular Comic Book Podcast.
Nice.
Thank you all for listening.
See you next time.